few announcements before we begin. If you need English to Spanish translation services for this meeting and are participating remotely, please click on the icon at the bottom of your Zoom screen that looks like a globe. Select Spanish as your preferred language from the drop-down menu, and then click on Mute Original Audio Source. You will now begin to hear the meeting in Spanish. If you are joining us in person and need interpretation, please look for Jessica Medina and ask her to escort you to our translation station. Jessica, please raise your hand so everyone can see you. I can't see that she did it, but I'm trusting she did. Ms. Demasi, could you please make this announcement in Spanish for us?
Thank you, Ms. Collins. Buenas tardes a todos. Estamos ofreciendo servicios de interpretación simultánea del inglés al español durante esta reunión. Y estas son las opciones para tener acceso a la interpretación en español. Localice el icono de interpretación en la parte inferior derecha de la pantalla. Seleccione su preferencia de idioma, ya sea español o inglés. Muy importante seleccionar modo silencio audio original para evitar escuchar ambos idiomas. Si usted está participando en esta reunión en persona y necesita servicios de interpretación, por favor localice a la señorita Jessica Medina y ella le mostrará nuestra estación de traducción. Jessica, ¿podrías por favor levantar la mano para que todo el mundo te pueda ver? Muchísimas gracias. Thank you, Ms. Collins.
Thank you, Ms. Demasi. If there are any members of the public on the line who would like to make comments during the public comment portion of the meeting, please sign up to speak by using the Q&A button in the bottom of the center of your Zoom screen. If you have logged into this meeting by phone call only, you may raise your hand to speak during the public comment period by dialing *9 on your telephone and wait to be called on. If you are joining us in person, please make sure to fill out a speaker card located in the back of the room and hand to Jessica Medina once you have filled them out. Madam Chair, you are welcome to call the meeting to order.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And we look forward to a smooth running meeting. I know it's a little bit complicated. We also have our location in Sacramento too. So at this time, I'm calling the meeting to order. It's the 484th joint meeting of the Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy and the Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy Advisory Committee. At this time, could we please have the roll call?
Ms. Escalante? Ms. Hutzel? Mr. Torres? Mr. Szymanski? Mr. Luna? Ms. Pavley?
That was you. Oh.
Okay. Ms. Pavley?
Microphones.
Oh. Okay. So we have Ms. Pavley?
Here.
Ms. Martin?
Here.
Mr. Sapp?
Here.
Ms. Munoz? Mr. Veras? Mr. Ortega? Ms. Parks?
And we do have Mr. Ortega.
Yeah, I'm here.
And I'm here too.
Thank you. We are just at quorum.
Phew.
And James, the role of the advisory committee, please.
Ms. Acker? Here. Mr. Ahern? Mr. Anderson?
Here.
Ms. Brown? Mr. Cacciotti?
Here.
Mr. Corridori? Mr. Dennert?
Here.
Ms. Dransfeld?
Here.
Ms. James?
Here.
Mr. Kishbaugh?
Here.
Mr. Lang? Ms. Lopez?
Here.
Ms. Maurer?
Here.
Mr. Manukyan? Ms. Prado? Ms. Rosen? Mr. Rossman? Ms. Stevens? Mr. Thomas?
Here.
Ms. Wall?
Here.
Mr. Wendler?
Here.
Mr. Yagparyan? Ms. Buckley Weber?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you.
And at this time, we'll go ahead and introduce our legislative participants or their staff. And I know we have Mr. Pershing here. Welcome. And do we have any other legislative representatives?
Yeah, Declan Floyd from Senator Portantino's office. Glad the board is back in person. Nice to see everybody.
Thank you. From Sacramento itself. Appreciate it. So that is the introduction of our legislative participants. And now, thank you for introducing yourselves. We'll move on to our reports. The first report is the chairperson's reports. And I think since last we met, we certainly had a wonderful wildlife bridge overcrossing groundbreaking. That was very awesome. And then we just had a wonderful field trip out at Deer Creek Beach area, formerly known as the Mansdorf property. Some property that may come into acquisition, the Trust for Public Land is looking at now, and looking forward to potentially the National Park Service bringing that forward. Do we have someone who'd like to report on the Coastal Commission? Not seeing any. And we'll note that Dave Szymanski is now here too. How about the Coastal Conservancy report? Not seeing any. The Attorney General's report, Ms. Arndt.
Good evening. I don't have a report this evening.
Ah.
Sorry to disappoint.
Okay. Mr. Szymanski, you would be up for the National Park Service.
Am I? There we go. Thank you, Madam Chair. This morning, I had the pleasure of being at a blessing for the nursery for the Liberty Canyon Wildlife Crossing. Alan Salazar, an elder in the Fernandinho Tatavium, did a blessing for us. He said a couple words as he was introducing the process. He said, you know, I don't believe in magic and mysticism, but we do this because if we approach everything with respect and reverence, we'll have more success if we bring our best selves to this kind of effort. So that was great. Over the next little while, that nursery will produce 30 to 50,000 plants. Thanks to MRCA, the nursery is located actually right behind Fire Station 125 on Las Virgenes Road. The Topanga Banjo and Fiddle Contest was held at Paramount Ranch yesterday. And I want to thank Council Member Elise Buckley Weber and Mayor Debbie Klein Lopez for introducing one of the acts. I think they had a fairly good turnout. It's the first post-pandemic running of that event, and it's their 60th year in business, which is impressive. It also featured a Mexican-American folk band from Fillmore, I believe. From Moore Park. Okay, great. Yeah, at 3 o'clock there on the main stage. Let me see what else is happening. I think that's we're very hopeful for Deer Creek Beach. Also known as the Mansdorf property, looking for a different name. Chairwoman Parks mentioned the property, but just to enumerate some of the values there, it's 1,290 acres, has 5 blue line streams. When we look at the Santa Monica Mountains and Simi Hills, at least those lands within the National Recreation Area boundary, approximately 10% of the acreage is covered by what we consider vulnerable plant communities. But on that property, it's 30%. So it's sort of a biodiversity hotspot within a biodiversity hotspot. There are also at least 26 the property was extremely important to the Chumash people that lived there previously, and we're really looking forward to working with those folks to help protect that heritage. And that's my report.
Thank you. A lot of positive things going on. And one additional positive thing for us is Craig Sapp has come back from retirement to serve. Mr. Edmondson.
Just the record should indicate that Mr. Szymanski answered aye to the quorum.
Yes.
He didn't know it, but he was here.
Thank you.
Well, thanks, Madam Chair. That was great to be back. I've seen a lot of faces. The only reason I really came back is that I didn't get a proper send-off when I... in the middle of...
Second send-off?
Well, I'm hoping to get a better one, the next one. So, yeah, as Ms. Parks alluded to, I am back from retirement as a retired annuitant. So I'm limited by number of hours, but the kind of the focal point of why I came back was to assist in the district transition to a new district superintendent going forward. So anyway, so I'll be here probably knowing the state and how long it takes. Amanda, the resource agency's got their stuff together. State Parks, you know, we got a lot to learn from resource agency, but knowing how long it could possibly take, several months, 3 or 4 months to, you know, to get through. Yeah, no, well, and, but yeah, but it's, but again, it's glad to be back. So I come in 3 or 4 days a week, depending upon what's going on. And then, you know, I go back into my cave and then they'll dust me off and I'll be back. So, but it's been great. And then again, it's having to see everybody. It's, you know, much different than, you know, Zoom, which although I didn't participate in the meetings, I have done a lot of Zoom meetings since I retired. But as far as state report, I don't have anything. I'm just getting caught up on stuff, but it's as if I didn't leave the same issues. It's like, we're still dealing with this, you know, and I thought all this stuff has been resolved, but apparently not. So it's great to be work on some of these things and get those things put to bed. I'm glad to be back.
We're glad to have you. There were some pretty intense times over the last 2 years with COVID and big decisions to be made, and so much appreciate the collaboration with National Parks, State Parks, Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy, the counties, the parks. There was just a lot of big decisions that needed to be made, and it's so nice to have this wonderful collaborative Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy that we get to know each other and work better for it all. We have a Forest Service report. If we have Tom Torres up here.
Yeah, I'm here in virtual land.
Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. Hey, for the good of the order, I'll just share a couple of things that is occupying a lot of our energy and effort right now. And that's one of those things is preparing for the upcoming fire season. We've been engaged in a lot of preseason preparation and hiring. And just for your all's awareness, we've hired an additional 135 firefighters on the Angeles National Forest. We're expecting a pretty busy fire year. And we're already sharing resources that we have on the Angeles with the states of New Mexico and Arizona. As you all are probably aware, there's pretty significant wildfire happening over there. So we're already engaged in battling wildfire across the Southwest. Hey, the other thing I'll mention just real quick, again, for the good of the order, is next week in Pasadena, there is a fire conference, a wildland fire conference hosted by the International Association of Wildland Fire. And the theme is fire and climate. And the Forest Service, along with many other partners and members of that association, are going to be engaged in discussion, dialogue, presentation about a lot of issues related to wildfire and climate. And there's going to be representatives from across the country and around the globe, to be honest with you. And part of that conference is going to include a field trip on the Angeles National Forest up to Mount Wilson to talk about some of the challenges and some of the opportunities that exist here in Southern California. And some of those lessons can be applied across the country and throughout the other countries in the world. So anyway, just wanted to share that. And as that relates to the Forest Service, there will be a number of sort of high-ranking Forest Service officials here, including the Chief of the Forest Service, will be here to offer some closing remarks and a lot of panel discussions with various folks from the Forest Service. So wildfire in preparation for that eventuality is taking up a lot of our effort and time. So thank you for allowing me to share that with y'all.
Thank you. And it's nice to have wildfires going on right here in our backyards, but we always got to be prepared. And thankfully, we've been able to give out some $25 million in grants to help prevent fires and to make us more resilient. The legislative report is next. Joe, did you want to take that one?
We're obviously anxiously awaiting the legislature's response to the governor's proposal in the May revise. And there are a number of smaller bills that affect this. I think the most important thing we can do is to encourage our members to remember that with $100 billion surplus, it's probably a good time to start buying the land that we all wanted to acquire, but people said, well, this isn't the year to do it. Well, this is the year to do it. And that's where most of our energy is going right now.
Can't ask for better than that. Our next item on the agenda would be the Mountain Recreation Conservation Authority report. Our buddy George is not here. George Lang would give the report. I do know that he was representing MRCA and Rory, also SMMC, at the Rancho Potrero Education Center that the COSCA and the MRCA and the CRPD all helped put together. And it was nice to be out there and to see this area that they have put out there in Broom Ranch in the Newberry Park area for kids. School students, for the most part, can come and be with nature. And they have a nice amphitheater they put in there with really nice stones and also, and the most amazing oak trees that they brought in with a crane that are, they got to be close to 40, 50 years old. They were just amazing to see what you can do. So that we'll look to see a catch up on his report at our next meeting. The next item is Santa Clarita Watershed Recreation and Conservation Authority report with Janine. Do we have that?
She's not here tonight. The only report is that there'll be a meeting on June 2nd for Squirka.
Thank you. And then the Wildlife Corridor Conservation Authority. Paul, do you want to take that?
Definitely no report. So leave it at that.
Okay. And that's kind of the theme of this evening anyway, wildlife corridors. We have next is item L, and that's the Moore Park Watershed Parks and Recreation and Conservation Authority report. Did you want to take that one, Don?
I will. At long last, we did have a board meeting just this last Thursday. It's been a while, and I'll give some background as to how we got to where we are. Originally, we got an 80-acre property from the city of Moore Park when we formed the joint, if you will, the joint powers agreement with the Conservancy. And we applied for a recreational trails program grant to make that park into a active park, not just a land that was going nowhere. And while we had a pretty good chance at it, the only thing that held us back, and they said we had no connectivity. It was just within the park itself. So, okay, problem. So we decided that we should find some way to find a way to a connection to properties that we, people we knew and properties we knew. So we approached CRPD and Costco and said, well, we ought to have a trail go from our property to your property. And they kind of agreed to the concept. So we pursued it from there. and we got a Prop 35 grant, or 68 grant, and the money allowed us to hire Phoenix Civil Engineering and a person named Jonathan Turner, and they went to work on creating, if you will, a full scope look at what it would take to create that trail and a conceptual layout, if you will, for the trails. And once it was completed, Jeremy Larentowski, who is with the city of Moorpark and is on our board of the NWPRCA, and other members of his staff and Mr. Turner then went out and met with seven agencies that would somehow be affected by what we were doing. Four were regulatory. One was the Santa Rosa property, the
Municipal Advisory Council. Yeah.
And they were all pretty positive. We didn't ask them to approve what we just wanted their comment. What do you think of this? And the comments were good. So we went back to the drawing board and said, now it's time to harvest our responses. And we took that to the board, and the board saw the same presentation that we have been showing to others, quite a good presentation, very detailed, very schematic, and all the changes that would be made at the various intersections. And the board approved that we would move forward on that basis of that the design. There were two different routes we could follow. One was more hazardous than the other. It took a lot more money to do it. But the route we chose is still going to cost $4.7 million to construct. So now our major term will be to go to fundraising. And since it's only been 4 days since we had that, I do have six areas I'm going to attack, but I'll be coming back to you to tell you as we make progress. But I do think the benefit of this property and the trails is it's the first real north-south trail into Ventura County from the area where we are. And secondly, it has connectivity from our 80 acres to the Santa Rosa Valley connections and to the CRPD and COSCA connections, so robust connections. And these are partners that we know. That's a benefit, I think, mostly. And then I think we have a lot of confidence in the work that Phoenix did, as was demonstrated by the presentations we made. So we'll be back and report as we develop fundraising activities. But I think the faster we do this, it will not be real quick on 4.7 million, but the faster we get to this, the more people will recognize what we're up to. And that's my report.
Thank you. And what is it, $100 billion the state has? Was it?
So Don, I'm sure, didn't neglect to mention it, but we're the agency that gave the grant for the study.
Indeed, that's right.
Yeah.
And it was much appreciated. And I think the use we had with Phoenix was well used. It really was, we could use that to display what we were doing to the public.
Well, I just thank you for your leadership on that. I was telling them the hardest projects are the ones that cross jurisdictions, you know, those are the hard ones. And so it's wonderful to see you taking the lead on this.
Thank you. Thank you. Did you have a comment?
Yeah. First, I thought Fran, when she touched her bottle, it was a change jar you're about to pass around. It's like, that's very ambitious. I guess we could
keep
right
passing.
I know Bruce had brought it up before, but the connection between Moorpark and Alamos Canyon in Simi Valley. I hiked at the county park where you pay a couple bucks to park. And from the county park to the entrance of the park is about 25 minutes. Now, given I walk slow, and I end up looking at every plant along the way. But it's 25 minutes before you get into the park. What's the status of the connection to it from Moorpark? I know you had mentioned before there's a gate issue or something. How are we on getting that gate opened?
Which?
I think you had mentioned before there was a gate that connects from Moorpark to Alamos Canyon.
To be determined.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it's a gate that, because I haven't been able to get out there yet. My knees have been, but There is a gate down by Moorpark College, and then you go up the hill, but I didn't think there was any gates past that, if I remember correct, because we had a Civil War reenactment out there in that property. So I think you can go up that hill. I asked my residents to climb that hill, but they couldn't do it that day. It was too hot. So I think that we still need to sit down and take a look at all that. I think part of the problem is that Jeremy, you know, just inundated like everybody else is. He's working on, you know, watershed. He's got a lot of things going on. He's also in charge of park recreation and parks for City of Moore Park. So, but we need to look at that. We brought it up before and discussed it at some point when we get some time, I think. And at least Jeremy is, I mean, he's just overwhelmed and he's doing a great job.
Indeed, I agree.
We find out more about that at a future meeting, but there's a park that's hard to get to, and you might be, even though it's in Simi, it might be shorter to get to from Moore Park. So another night. That's it.
Thank you for the report. Item M is oral reports by staff. Does staff have any oral reports? Seeing heads shaking no. Then the next one is item N, and that's questions to staff. Does anyone have any questions that aren't already on our agenda?
Mary Sue.
I wanted to ask Joe, what's going to be the process for the acquisition of open space that these funds that we hope come through? Would the priority be those areas on the work plan, or is it going to be, I mean, what should we as a city do or other agencies to prepare for this?
Well, the legislature and governor have set aside a very considerable amount of money to implement the climate change and land conservation objectives set out by the governor. And we have the 30 by 30 program. And it's pretty clear that pretty much every agency that acquires land within the Natural Resources Agency is going to be participating in that. So I would expect, and the governor announced that there's a first state park, first new state park in a number of years was part of that program. And I would imagine the state parks would continue to expand their state park system. But the principal agency is going to be the Wildlife Conservation Board. They will have the most amount of money. Now, they are not a land owning agency. They're a grant giving agency. And this the Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy and the other conservancies have been successful in persuading the Wildlife Conservation Board to give a number of grants to the Santa Monica Mountains. In addition to that, there will be funds directly to the Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy. And I would imagine that the legislature, there are a number of proposals that have been made by local legislators, and that those proposals will be considered by the legislature. So it all depends on the appropriation. And I think that agencies and cities like yours would do well to put together the proposed projects. And frankly, at the end of the day, look and see which agency within the California Resources Agency has the most amount of money. And then I'd start there and then go down. And at a certain point, there'll be a mosquito abatement district that may have some money left and you can apply there.
Just a follow-up question. When you're suggesting get ready, I'm imagining doing an inventory of open space properties and then seeing if there's a willing seller, or do we have
to? Yeah, when we know the drill here. So it's very clear that projects that fit within the 30 by 30 criteria, and we have an extensive work program that's been thoroughly debated and gone through numerous public hearings and vetting from local government, that those projects certainly would probably score very highly. But we also have new projects. And landowners have realized that this is the year to try to make as good a deal as you possibly can. And so we're all literally all over California. We're finding landowners that are finally raising their hand and saying, it's about time. I'm ready to talk to a conservation agency. And so we get, not every day, but every week we do get inquiries. And so, and we passed some of those on to legislators, and we put some of those in our back pocket if Santa Claus is really good to us. So again, have to have a willing seller, have to have local support. It has to make a meaningful contribution to the governor's 30 by 30 conservation goals.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good question. And we do have a pretty extensive acquisition list that we have been keeping, dust off some of that. The next item on the agenda is members' comments on matters not on the agenda. Would you like to make a comment, Mr.
Madam Chair, yes.
Yes.
Is a question and a comment. First, I'd like to know at this facility in our parks, if they're maintained by electric lawn equipment or polluting gas powered equipment. Secondly, this is the first year, actually late last year, that small off-road equipment, they call it SORE, S-O-R-E, lawnmowers, weed whackers, gas powered leaf blowers, surpassed light duty vehicles, cars and trucks as a source of pollution in California. And there's money available coming out right now. CARB's working on a $30 million set aside allocated for small mom and pop gardeners. If your city wants or your county wants to do an ordinance banning gas powered leaf blowers, like a lot of us are doing in the San Gabriel Valley, is going through now, ours is coming into effect. So it'll be $30 million available starting this fall when they finish. And also the AQMD, which I sit on the board, they'll have a pot of money about $30 to $40 million also for districts, special district cities, municipalities, nonprofits, school districts, where you can turn in your old gas powered equipment and basically get 50 to 75% off state-of-the-art all-purpose electric equipment. Our city's been powered by all electric equipment, soccer fields, baseball fields, parks for the last 7 years. So you can do it. There's some applications where you may need gas, very rare. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is that part of the South Coast Air Quality Management District?
So under the SCAQMD, there'll be money available there, but there may also be some Carl Moyer funds for other air districts, maybe in Ventura,
too. We have Carl Moyer, great funding source. All right. Any other comments from members on items that aren't on the agenda? Not seeing any then. Let's then go to comments from members of the public on items not on the agenda and public testimony on all agenda items. Do we have some speakers who wish to speak?
Madam Chair, there are no members of the public online.
Well, then let's move on to our consent calendar.
Madam Chair, can we just ask, are there any members of the public there in person that would like to speak? Okay, I think that means we can move on. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. At this time, I'll turn it over to Don and the advisory committee.
Okay, the consent calendar has three items, 8A, B, and C. I think 8D was postponed. And so, advisory committee, does any member wish to withdraw any of those three items for open discussion? And if I see no takers for that I've offered, then I'll accept a motion to approve.
Move approval, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Second, Mary Sue.
Thank you, Mary Sue. We're not taking a roll call vote since we're meeting in person, so we'll do it by acclamation. So I'll do it this way. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Oppose. That's it.
Wow. Pretty cool. That was like the first. Who knew? All right. So with the advice of our advisory committee, do we have any requests to pull anything or a motion to approve the consent calendar?
A motion to move.
We have a motion and a second. Ours, however, will be by roll call because we have some Sacramento individuals.
Mr. Szymanski?
As I noted to the chair and to James earlier, periodically the Department of the Interior does an ethics review for employee membership on boards. I think it happened with Art Eck 20 some years ago. So there's no reason to think that it won't, the ethics waiver won't be approved, but while they're reviewing it, I can attend, but I'll have to abstain from voting on all matters. Hopefully it'll be resolved soon.
Thank you. And thank you for being here and look forward to you voting. So we go ahead and finish the roll call then, James.
Ms. Pavley?
Aye.
Ms. Martin?
Aye.
Mr. Satt?
Yes.
Mr. Ortega?
Yes.
Ms. Parks?
Yes, thank you. So that does pass. And now for the exciting part of our agenda, number 9 is a presentation on Ventura County's Habitat Connectivity and Wildlife Corridor Overlay Zone. We have with us this evening the senior planner for Ventura County, Shelley Sussman, who helped lead the charge on putting forward this wildlife corridor zone, as I call it. And Assistant County Counsel Francesca Verdon, who spent some good time helping to ensure that it was all nice and legal and defending it in court, and may get some more action on that too, as I hear. But let me turn it over now and introduce both our two wonderful county staff members that help lead the way to a first of its kind wildlife corridor zone, probably the first in the United States. So are we available by Zoom, ladies?
Hello. I'm here. Can
and there's oh hi Shelley.
Can I be heard?
We can hear you. Go
Hello,
go ahead.
Chair Parks, thank you. We have a PowerPoint. I'm not sure. I'm hoping the technology works to somehow miraculously zoom it over to. Looks like you guys have a screen set up over there. So,
yes.
Please was that anticipated? Okay, so let me give this a try.
And while she's working on it, I just want to give my compliments to AGP Video doing just a marvelous job. This is just really professional. It's all working well. I know in the early stages, we had a little trouble trying to figure out how to do it all, but this is just top notch. So thank you.
So I trust that you're seeing the presentation mode of the first slide. Is that correct?
No.
Not yet.
No. Uh-oh.
I know. It's not his fault.
Uh-oh. Let's see. It says it shows that it should be.
Yeah, it doesn't appear that you are actually sharing your screen for Zoom.
We might have a copy of the presentation. James, do you have one?
Let me see if I can pull that up. Oh, there we go.
Oh, here it comes.
Okay.
There it is.
See here. Okay.
And then Yeah, there we are. There we are.
Are we live?
Yes.
Okay, very good. So hello again. Thank you all for the chance to speak with you this evening. As Chair Parks noted, my name is Shelley Sussman. I'm a planner in Ventura County's Planning Division. And as she mentioned, I was the project planner and project manager for the Habitat Connectivity and Wildlife Corridor Project. I'm gonna provide just some very basic project background. There's always more to say, and I'm gonna keep it very high level. And then I'm going to hand it over to Francesca Verdin, an attorney in our county council's office, and she'll provide the overview of the recent project-related litigation. As this slide title states, this is a map showing the corridors that were officially approved by the County Board of Supervisors in March 2019. It's these corridors depicted in the lime green. The corridor ordinance and standards only apply in the unincorporated areas of Ventura County. Although I show the city boundaries here overlaid on top of the corridor, so you can see how the city boundaries impact wildlife movement. For the most part, the corridor excludes the land within the Los Padres National Forest. Although the mapped corridor that was mapped in 2006, the corridor does extend into the Los Padres, but our regulations don't apply for the most part up in that area. So again, wildlife corridors in Ventura County were identified and mapped in 2006 as part of a project called the South Coast Missing Linkages Project by a consortium called South Coast Wildlands. We did not, as part of our project, really amend the corridor boundaries. We did make some very, very minor adjustments that were parcel-based, just, you know, to make sure that the ordinance could be implemented at a parcel level, but our charge was not to go in and identify the corridor boundaries themselves. The entire corridor, including the area within the Los Padres, totals about 400,000 acres. And as you are no doubt aware, the corridors run through the Santa Monica Mountains in the south part of the county, into the Santa Susana Mountains, up into the Castaic Range, the Sierra Madres, and the Los Padres National Forest. The corridors do include both of our primary rivers, so the Santa Clara River and the Ventura River. Getting to the project intent and purpose, the Ventura County Board of Supervisors directed the Planning Division to write an ordinance to address wildlife movement and protect corridors within the county. So the purpose of the ordinance is to preserve and enhance habitat connectivity, and the general intent is to minimize impacts of development on wildlife movement and plant species, while also protecting individual property rights. And the ordinance was heard by the Planning Commission in January of 2019 and ultimately approved by the board in March 2019. There are five main regulatory mechanisms linked to four project objectives that were developed as part of the ordinance. The four project objectives are listed here: minimize direct and indirect barriers, minimize vegetation loss and habitat fragmentation, and address areas of the county that are at greatest risk of losing connectivity due to development that blocks remaining access. And the regulatory mechanisms that we developed to address those project objectives include lighting standards, lighting regulations, fencing regulations, buffers required around surface water features and road crossings that were determined to be particularly important for wildlife movement, and the identification of critical wildlife passage areas where compact development is required. And the overall regulatory approach we took was to incentivize applicants to minimize impacts through the permitting process. So for example, if an applicant wants more than a certain amount of impermeable fencing, they would be required to get a discretionary permit. But if the applicant stays within prescribed fencing limits, they would only need a ministerial permit. There were very few things that we outright prohibited altogether, but the intentional planting of invasive plants is one of those things, unless it's planted as a commercial crop. As I mentioned on the last slide, one of the project objectives was to address choke points. So in addition to the overall corridor map, we identified three areas within the county that we determined to be particularly vulnerable to the loss of connectivity. So one area is the Simi Hills. A significant portion of corridors that move north and south through this area is in LA County, as you know. leaving a pretty narrow portion within the jurisdiction of Ventura County. The other CWPA is the Tierra Rajada Valley. This portion of the corridor is constrained by the corridor boundary itself, in addition to the city boundaries of Moore Park and Simi and Thousand Oaks. There are important water features and road crossings in this area that make it important to keep it as open as possible for wildlife movement. The third area is Oakview, right up here. And this is a narrow, another north-south linkage constrained by Lake Casitas to the west and the urbanized areas of Oakview to the east. And it's important adjacency to the Ventura River, which of course is important high quality habitat. And there are some increasing numbers of vineyards in the area using large amounts of impermeable fencing. Not surprisingly, this became a very controversial project. This photo is from the Planning Commission, and the people who showed up to oppose it definitely outnumbered those who supported it, especially at the Planning Commission hearing. Things were more evenly split at the board hearing. I've listed here the main things that people both objected to and supported, and we made many revisions during the drafting process to address public comments. For example, issues related to fire risk and the management of vegetation on one's property was a huge issue and very sensitive, as the county was still struggling in the aftermath of the Thomas and Woolsey fires. So emotions ran very hot, no pun intended. And there was just a huge amounts of discussion and consternation about fire risk. And in response to these concerns, we added language. We coordinated very closely with the Ventura County Fire District and added language that allowed for things like the removal of vegetation with hand tools and lots of other strategies for vegetation modification that would be allowed. There was a lot of concern also about security, property security. And so we worked directly with the Sheriff's Department and worked through issues related to lighting and motion sensors and security lighting and where it could be left on and those sorts of issues. And in the end, as I mentioned, our goal was to balance the need for wildlife movement with the continued use of one's property. And as you probably know, shortly after the board approved the project, we were sued. And Francesca will take the story from here.
Thank you, Shelley. Good evening, everyone. I'm Francesca Verdeen, Assistant County Counsel for the County of Ventura. Thank you again for the opportunity to present today. It's my pleasure to be here with you today and to be able to tell you a little bit about the lawsuits that were filed against the county, challenging the county's adoption of this project. And so on April 25th, 2019, just, you know, 1 month after the county approved the project, the county was sued by two different organizational plaintiffs that were represented by the same law firm. The first group was the California Construction and Industrial Materials Association, which is basically a trade group for the construction and industrial materials industries. The second lawsuit was filed by the Ventura County Coalition of Labor, Agriculture, and Business. Next bullet, please, Shelley. Thank you. Various environmental conservation groups intervened in the lawsuits in defense of the project on the CEQA issues specifically. I'm going to go over the various claims that were raised in each of these lawsuits. But the interveners included the Los Padres Forest Watch, Defenders of Wildlife, Center for Biological Diversity, and National Parks Conservation Association. These groups were represented by the Environmental Law Clinic of the University of California, Irvine. And because there was substantial overlap between the two lawsuits, the cases were partially consolidated or combined to allow for a single administrative record and also for oral argument. So there was a combined hearing on the merits for these cases. But for all other purposes, the cases were separate. They maintained their separate case numbers and also had separate judgments. Next slide, please. Okay, so I'm going to go into a little bit more detail regarding each of the lawsuits. As I mentioned before, there was a lot of overlap between the two petitions. And this table here outlines the various claims that were raised by each of the plaintiffs. And they included CEQA violations. Both petitioners basically alleged that the county had improperly piecemealed their review, the county's review of the project, and also challenged the county's CEQA exemption determinations. The county, in approving the project, determined that the project was exempt pursuant to the Class 7 and 8 exemptions, which are two categorical exemptions that your board may be very familiar with. The Class 7 and 8 exemptions essentially apply to actions by regulatory agencies to assure the maintenance, restoration, or enhancement of natural resource or the environment, and that include procedures for protection of the environment. And so the county determined that the project was exempt pursuant to these two categorical exemptions, as well as pursuant to the common sense exemption. So both petitioners challenged the CEQA's exemption determinations. They also both claimed that the project would have a significant adverse environmental impact relating to a whole bunch of different issue areas. So they included impacts relating to fire hazards, mineral resources, agriculture, air quality, greenhouse gas emissions, community character, traffic, and circulation impacts. But really, the focus of their arguments were on, as Shelley had mentioned, you know, the alleged increased fire hazards and also alleged adverse impacts on mineral resources. In addition to the CEQA violations, the petitioners also alleged violations of the Surface Mining and Reclamation Act, specifically a provision of SMARA that is essentially a public disclosure requirement that requires a local agency to prepare and disclose a statement of reasons if it's when it's permitting a use that would threaten the potential to extract minerals. And so petitioners alleged that the county had violated that provision and attempted to invalidate the project approval on that basis. Some additional claims included a claim that the project was allegedly inconsistent with the county's general plan. And as you can see from this table here, CalSEMA's petition was essentially a subset of the, basically asserted a subset of the claims that CoLab asserted. CoLab asserted a whole bunch of additional claims in their lawsuit, including that the project was arbitrary and capricious. They alleged violations of the Williamson Act and also violations of the planning and zoning law, basically arguing that the county had violated certain procedural requirements under the planning and zoning law when it approved the project. So it really was kind of this, you know, everything kind of but the kitchen sink kind of lawsuit. There were a whole bunch of different types of claims there. In terms of the administrative record, it took nearly 2 years just to put the administrative record together. And it was really extensive. It was over 50,000 pages long. And it was ultimately certified and lodged by the county on March 30th of 2021. The cases were fully briefed by September 15th of 2021, and the combined merits hearing was held on November 9th of 2021. Petitioners, I'm going to stay here for just for a little bit longer, Shelley. Thank you. Petitioners' main arguments in terms of their briefing and also at oral argument really focused on the CEQA exemption, their CEQA exemption challenge, as well as the Surface Mining and Reclamation Act, their SMARA claim, which was interesting. Basically, their argument basically was that the county had erred in determining that the project was exempt from CEQA and that the county had failed to consider alleged adverse impacts, again, primarily focusing on alleged fire and mineral resource related impacts. With respect to the fire hazards, petitioners claimed that the project would increase fire hazards by making it harder for property owners to clear vegetation for fire prevention. And they principally relied on a memorandum that was prepared by a hired consultant and some limited hearing testimony. They also claimed that the project would adversely impact mineral resources. And their argument there was that the project would allegedly make the permitting process more difficult for surface mining operations and projects to be approved. So they said that the project made it harder for mining operators to be able to meet the required permit approval findings because now they would have to show that their project is consistent with a general plan, which include as a result of this project, included some new policies around addressing wildlife movement, and also that the project would increase opposition to mining projects and also increase the costs of those operations as well. In addition to what was reflected here in this table, CoLab, this didn't actually make it into their operative pleading, but the original lawsuit that they filed also included a takings claim that basically they were arguing that the project's compact siting standards affected a regulatory taking. And so the county really pushed back on that defective claim early on in the case for various reasons, including that type of claim, you know, that the petitioners CoLab didn't have standing, and also that claim was not ripe. And this kind of gets me a little bit back to, you know, what Shelley mentioned earlier, in that really the project, with very limited exception, does not prohibit development activities. There are some limited prohibitions with respect to lighting and some perimeter fencing and the planting of invasive plants. But really the primary feature of the project is to require certain types of development activities that were previously exempt from permitting requirements or otherwise were allowed with an over-the-counter ministerial permit to either comply with those standards that minimize impacts to wildlife movement or to obtain discretionary approval and to undergo environmental review so that the county can consider and mitigate the potential impacts of such development on wildlife movement. And so the projects, we didn't really go into that much detail about some of the project specific provisions, but there's a whole bunch of exemptions for a lot of the regulations, and the project's applicability varies widely depending upon the size and location of a parcel, the type and exact location of the proposed development activity, and the results of any applicable permitting process. So because of that, the takings claim that CoLab alleged in their original complaint was not ripe. It wouldn't be ripe unless and until a property owner actually applied for and was denied a permit under the new rules. And that hadn't happened. So CoLab ultimately amended its petition and eliminated its takings claim. So what's reflected on the table here is what was included in the operative pleadings that were brief and argued before the trial court. Next slide, please. So the great news is that the county prevailed. Judgment was entered in favor of the county. And my apologies, I have here February 2022, but actually judgment was just entered in April of 2022. February 2022 is when we received the court's proposed statements of decision, which were pretty comprehensive and very detailed in resolving all of the principal issues in favor of the county. The court did adopt those statements of decision in full, and judgment was entered just last month. The court denied the petitions, dismissed all of the claims that were asserted by CoLab and CalSEMA. Among the court's findings were that the court did not violate CEQA, that the county, the court found that the court had not improperly piecemealed its review of the project. The arguments that CoLab and CalSEMA made were that the county at the time, when it adopted the project, was also in the process of completing a very comprehensive update of its general plan. And so the petitioners had argued that this project was really, that should have been, environmental review should have been completed for this project as part of the larger general plan update that the county was doing. The court agreed with the county that no, that those are separate projects with very distinct purposes, and that no piecemeal review had occurred on that basis. The other argument that CalSEMA had advanced with respect to the CEQA claim, piecemealing claim, was that the ordinance, the project itself, applies to the non-coastal zone. And so it doesn't include the county, the unincorporated area in the coastal zone. And so CalSEMA argued that the county should have simultaneously processed similar amendments to the coastal zone. And the court disagreed, agreed with the county that no, there was no improper piecemeal review and with respect to that either, because amendments to the coastal zoning ordinance and the county's local coastal program is not subject to CEQA. It's subject to a separate regulatory program. And so the court agreed and decided that issue in favor of the county. With respect to the CEQA, the county CEQA exemption determinations, the court found that substantial evidence supported the county's determination that the project was exempt from CEQA and upheld the county's determination that the project was exempt pursuant to those categorical exemptions, the class 7 and class 8 exemptions as an action that benefits the a natural resource and the environment, and also upheld the determination that the project was exempt pursuant to the common sense exemption, and that the petitioners had basically failed to meet their burden of establishing that there was an unusual circumstance such that the CEQA exemption, the categorical exemptions would not apply. The court, in doing so, the court also, you know, talked, went through and discussed the substantial evidence that, that the record, you know, was replete with evidence that the project would benefit the environment. As Shelley mentioned, there was a lot of public engagement, you know, throughout the project development and approval process. And the record, like I said, was 50,000 pages long. There were plenty of research, scientific studies, lots of testimony, and extensive comments from wildlife biologists and conservation groups and others. So just overwhelming evidence that the project, you know, fell within the two categorical exemptions as well as the common sense exemption. And in rejecting the petitioner's arguments regarding alleged fire and mineral resource impacts, the court made some interesting, some good observations, including that the petitioners basically had tried to advance an argument that concerning the risk of fire that really inaccurately portrayed the provisions of the ordinance. So petitioners really mischaracterized what the ordinance does, and that there are numerous exemptions for vegetation modification, including for fire prevention purposes, that the fire district has discretion to allow brush clearing under the existing regs before project approval and also after project approval, as well as that there was no evidence that the evidence that the petitioners relied upon failed to suggest that the provisions of the ordinance would be enforced in any way that would really result in a significant increase in the number or severity of wildland fires when compared to the pre-ordinance baseline. And that the memorandum that the petitioners relied upon really just consisted of conclusory statements and unexplained opinions. And as for mining, the court noted that the petitioner, again, didn't demonstrate with record evidence that that county officials would exercise their discretion in any arbitrary or prohibitive way towards mining projects, that just because a mining applicant may have to satisfy new requirements does not mean that the viability of mining operations is threatened, and that the county's existing rules already required mining operations to minimize impacts on wildlife and biological resources. So again, you know, the primary feature of the project was to kind of address development activities that were previously to some extent going unchecked, right, for their impacts on wildlife movement, because they were either exempt from permitting requirements or allowed with a ministerial permit, such that the county didn't really have an opportunity to address and mitigate the impacts of that development on wildlife movement. Surface mining projects, though, have always been subject to a discretionary permit and have gone through that environmental review. And so the county has approved and conditioned those projects to mitigate their impacts on wildlife movement for a very long time. And so the project didn't really affect the regulatory status quo for those projects. The county did not violate SMARA, so the court basically indicated that substantial evidence supported the county's determination that this project does not qualify as a project that would threaten the potential to extract minerals. And so that SMARA provision that petitioners alleged was violated doesn't apply to this, the approval of this project. And so the court said substantial evidence supported the county's determination in that regard. And also, even if there had been a SMARA violation, that the petitioners had not established any prejudice with respect to that claim.
Ms. Hardeen, could you wrap up, please?
Oh, yes, sorry about that. Okay, so the other, you know, we're just that the county did not also rule that the county did not violate the planning and zoning law, and also that with respect to various other claims that the petitioners had either forfeited, waived, or that those claims were outside the scope of the operative pleadings. And so these cases were really a complete victory for the county in the trial court. And while I'd love to say that, you know, case closed, it's very rarely that easy. And we just recently received notices from petitioners of their intent to appeal the trial court judgments, which is the very first step in the appeal process. We don't know at this point what their grounds for appeal are. However, we're confident that the trial court got it right the first time, and the county is in a strong position, and we anticipate the decisions of the trial court will withstand appeal. So that concludes our presentation. Thank you again for the opportunity to be here today.
Thank you. I appreciate it was quite the battle to get the project approved, being the wildlife corridor zone. But I just want to thank the Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy. Paul Edelman was a rock star. And I would just like to list some of the proponents, because you heard a lot of what was charged against us. But the proponents include Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy, the Nature Conservancy, National Wildlife Federation, SC Wildlands, SOAR, the Ojai Raptor Center, Friends of the Santa Clara River, Save Open Space Santa Monica Mountains, Sea Frog Sierra Club, California Chaparral Institute, California Native Plant Society, California State Parks Foundation, California Trout, California Wilderness Coalition, Center for Regenerative Agriculture, Channel Islands Restoration, Caneo Oak Tree Advocates, Defenders of Wildlife, Earth Justice, Food and Water Watch, Friends of the Ventura River, Green Latinos, Keep Sespe Wild, Matilaha Coalition, Mountain Lion Foundation, National Parks Conservation Association, North Ranch Mountain Bikers, Ojai Valley Green Coalition, Once Upon a Watershed, Paso Pacifico Poison Free, Malibu Public Lands Alliance Network, Surf Rider Foundation, Ventura County Chapter, Temescal Chapter of the Surf Riders, Temescal Canyon Association, Ventura and Caneo Valley Audubon Society, Ventura Citizens for Hillside Preservation, Ventura County Wildlife Trackers, Wild Earth Guardians, Wildlife Care of Southern California, businesses like Patagonia, several cities, including the cities of Moorpark, Thousand Oaks, Ojai, and Agoura Hills, and our Santa Monica Mountains partners from Los Angeles, Councilmember Paul Koretz, Supervisor Sheila Kuhl. So just really amassing a lot of support, which helped. You saw the picture of the planning commission where planning commissioners were told by one rancher, you should be taken out and shot if you approve this. So this was, as mentioned, a very hot item. What it basically does is it provides lighting standards and fencing standards and buffers from creeks, as well as buffers from wildlife passages. And in the critical wildlife areas, it calls for clustering. And that's basically it. And for the issues on fire was you can't take a bulldozer into a creek, but you can take a chainsaw. So that's how we dealt with that. So we'll see what happens, because as it was mentioned, it is going to be challenged again. But what this did was take, if you're familiar, it's an old document, the South Coast Missing Linkages Study. If you have seen that, what our county did is they put it into GIS. So you can go to by lot and find out where the zone is and if you're in the wildlife corridor zone. And they did a incredible outreach of mailing to all of everybody that was in the wildlife corridor. So they knew about it, and it was a very robust public participation and setting a precedent. And then a lot of that came from the good work of folks like Seth Riley, National Park Service, came and testified, as well as Paul Edelman and others. So it was quite the effort, and hopefully we'll prevail with this second appeal to the court's decision. And what a great decision. The judge basically stated, this is for the environment. You don't need to do CEQA. So, you know, that to me said a lot, as Joe was saying, you know, that common sense exemption. All right. Mr. Anderson.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome. Love it. So my question is, have you guys been, has anybody reached out to you all in terms of maybe other counties or other jurisdictions or whatever and said, hey, this is an interesting idea. We're interested in trying to take our own stab at this and in other locations?
Yeah, I've heard the mayor's office in Los Angeles was very excited to hear that we had prevailed in court. So looking at other areas to follow suit.
Yes, the short answer is yes. Not just in California, but across the country.
Excellent.
Bruce?
Can we get a copy of this?
Would you like a copy of the PowerPoint? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. I don't think it was on the agenda.
There
was a staff report.
We'll provide that to James, and James can make it available.
I do have that, Madam Chair, and we'll send that around tomorrow.
Thank you. All right. So if that concludes that, thank you, ladies, for the presentation, and really appreciate you. And I know the work continues, right? So thank you.
Thank you. I'm not sure how to get it off the screen. So I'm just going to leave the meeting.
Okay, thank you. We'll go now on to item 9B. This is consideration of a resolution authorizing an augmentation to grant SMM 40-1523 for Towsley Canyon Park capital improvements.
Is there a presenter for this item?
Hi, that would be me. Good evening, Chair Parks, Conservancy Board and Advisory Committee. My name is Julian Buenaventura. I am a project manager with MRCA's Park Planning and Development Department. I'll just give a little bit of background on the resolution. So currently the grant that we have has contributed to helping with Towsley Canyon improvements. Towsley Canyon is located in New Hall, and it's a popular hiking attraction and offers a space for wedding and special events rental. In 2015, we actually restored the swimming pool area to extend the use of the life of the facility. In 2018, we also did improvements to the irrigation and installed an irrigation system around the lodge. And in 2021, we completed some improvements with ADA accessibility upgrades, which would include a van ADA parking spot. We also completed new concrete around the park, the pool area, as well as the terrace, and then also improved some new restroom facility accessibility for ADA upgrades in the restroom. And this augmentation request is just for $19,000 to help finalize the fence that we're actually replacing around the pool. And with LA County Public Health, there is a requirement that we had not met. So we need a fence modification to improve that. And the cost of the augmentation would cover the subconsultant making the corrections that are needed for the plan check to LA County Public Health, as well as covering the contracted work for that fence modification.
Thank you, Advisory Committee. Any questions? Do I have a motion? Thank you.
Sean seconds.
Thank you, Sean. Same routine before. Mr. All Chair, in favor, say
Mr.
aye.
Chair, Mr. Chair, could you announce who the maker of the motion was?
Ms. Acker.
Thank you.
Yeah. So do we had ayes? Do we have a nay? No nays.
All right. Passes. Okay. With that advice from the Advisory Committee, does the Conservancy have a motion? Thank you. Senator Pavlin.
Yes, I'd be glad to move approval.
Second.
And a second from Mr. Szymanski. Could we have the roll call?
Mr. Szymanski?
Abstain.
Ms. Pavley?
Yes.
Ms. Martin?
Yes.
Mr. Sack?
Yes.
Mr. Ortega?
Yes.
Ms. Parks?
Yes, thank you.
And that Madam Chair? I'm sorry, James, I don't know if you're seeing it on your side, but when I look at the boardroom on Zoom, all I have is a black box where I used to be actually seeing people there. I don't know if that's just me.
If you could just switch over to speaker view, that should resolve that for you.
Thank you.
Sure.
And now we'll go to item C, 9C, and this is consideration of a resolution authorizing the grant of general funds to the MRCA for the Topanga Big Wild project planning and design.
Paul or Rory, comments?
This Big Wild area described in the staff report is an area where the MRCA really has no project planning and design funding to implement projects and develop them for funding. And so they submitted this grant for general funds to do project planning and design in that area. There's a map there that models what the Conservancy adopted for this Topanga State Park Big Wild planning area to kind of fill in the gaps around that big 20,000 acre habitat area. It's a total of $200,000 of general fund to the MRCA.
Thank you, Paul. Any questions for Paul? And do I have a motion to approve? Thank you, Ms. Acker. A second. Thank you for down there. Thank you very much. Same rule. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Noes? No noes. Passes.
And with that advice, do we have a motion here at the Conservancy?
Move for approval.
Thank you, Mr. Sapp.
I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Ortega. Can we please have the roll call?
I have a quick question.
Yes.
Madam Chair? Sorry. Could I just get a little bit more about what the deliverable from this planning, what that might look like in terms of what we're getting? I was a little unclear from the agenda.
It would be a combination of appraisals, a reporting on negotiations, paying for preliminary title reports, doing category exemptions.
So basically the groundwork before being able to
work,
acquire. Okay.
Mapping, research, owner contacts, diving deeper into what's into some of the easements and things of that nature on properties.
Thank you. Ready to vote.
Rainbow.
No, ready to vote. Thank you.
Mr. Szymanski?
Abstain.
Ms. Pavley?
Yes.
Ms. Martin?
Yes.
Mr. Sapp?
Yes.
Mr. Ortega?
Yes.
Ms. Parks?
Yes, thank you. As I understand it, we actually have a closed session and that it also is not in this room, so we will have to move to the auditorium, if I recall. Is that right?
We are going to call Ms. Martin from the other room. We're going to recess to Barbara Collins' office, which is behind the theater. I'll go ahead and make a short announcement and we can adjourn this portion of the meeting into closed session. We'll return afterwards. So we'll come back here. And this is just the Conservancy board members, so just the members of the board.
Okay, and then we will, after we come back here, we'll have the announcement if we make a decision, and then also regarding future meetings and adjournments, do we have a future meeting date set?
Madam Chair, we would normally be meeting on the 19th. That is observed as Juneteenth. And so we would be pushing our meeting back to the 27th. The official adjournment announcement should come after we come back in.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, I think in case some people may not be sticking around.
Gotcha.
The advisory committee. June 27 is the tentative next date. Yes, Mr. Thomas.
This is my first time here. I didn't know if all this audiovisual and technical things were here all the time, or they had to make a special effort for it. So I think we ought to thank them for doing all this.
Yeah, it is. It is one of the best I've seen for sure. Thank you, guys.
And with
Madam Chair, if I could just make the quick announcement to announce the case and we can go into closed session. So pursuant to Government Code Section 11126E1, the Conservancy, Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy will recess to closed session to discuss the pending litigation, Citizens for the Responsible Use of Carbon and La Costa Beaches versus Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy et al.
And with that, we'll go to closed session and we'll be back here to close the meeting. Thank you. Okay, we are back in session now. We had a quick closed session, and we have I'll turn it over to our attorney, Mr. Maloney.
So thank you, Madam Chair. In closed session, the Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy considered pending litigation Citizens for the Responsible Use of Carbon in La Costa Beaches versus Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy. And this was closed session held under 11126E1 of the Government Code, and direction was given to staff counsel.
Thank you. And with that, then we will stand adjourned.
Madam Chair, I just need Ms. Medina to translate the announcement that Jeff just made.
Okay, and then we'll stand adjourned after we translate.
La Junta de Gobierno de la Conservación de las Montañas de Santa Monica, conocido como SMMC por sus siglas en inglés, se reunió en sesión privada de conformidad con las sesiones 54956.8 y 54956.9 de 4 del Código de Gobierno para discutir un caso judicial pendiente. Se dio dirección al personal.
Thank you so much. And with that, we're adjourned.
Thanks, everyone.